Well, Dan, isn't PBS funding just the greatest thing in the world?
I have food in my mouth.
Yes, food in all our mouths, since PBS has been so generous enough to sponsor a third season of Anime Was Not a Mistake.
Oh, yes, of course.
Not really, though. We couldn't afford PBS. This is more like I can't think of it.
The filmed in the basement bad audio home improvement shows.
Yeah, put up some trash
public
bags
access,
on the wall.
Public
access,
that's what I'm
public access, yeah. But we're back for a season 3 of Anime Was Not a Mistake, and before we get started, I just want to say that this season's going to be a little bit different, as we hinted, you know, and change is good, despite us all not liking change and being scared of it, but
yes.
I've worked really hard on curating this season, and then Dan's going to curate the next one for a... for me, it's about 5 episodes or so, where we're detailing a series, and we're going episode by episode with a lot of trivia, a lot of behind the scenes, you know, mysteries that were afoot during the time, and I think I've done a good job. I'm about halfway through writing up all our scripts for everything, and I think it flows very wonderfully.
No, I mean, just from how we've approached it, I mean, you seem, the excitement is palpable, like, you seem like you know, I mean, understandably, we love this show.
Yes.
You know, it seems like I can tell that you're excited to get into this. That makes me excited.
Well, I mean, Dan, I hate to say this, but this is a very Jonathan-esque type of show and scenario going on where we travel through the Americana roots of music and folklore and fashion. So what else is there to love? But before we get to the main event, Dan, of course... It is Anime Was Not a Mistake, so we must still, you know, light the torch for anime and detail our happenings during the week. How has our week been in the anime spheres, Dan?
I don't have a lot of anime news to bring to the table. I mean, I did manage to get tickets, because they put them up very, very late, but I did manage to get to, well, not late enough, but as in, like, they waited till the last minute, I guess. But they did put up some tickets for One Piece Stampede, so I'm going to go see that next weekend.
In the cinema show?
In the cinema show. I believe the dine-in cinema show, actually.
Oh, boy.
At a wholesome 2 in the afternoon...
I thought you said 2 at night.
dinner show I believe that should be before we record next week's episode, so... I'll have that to report on, but other than that, I sadly do not have very much else to report.
Well, neither do I, Dan. I played a few hours of Astral Chain for the Nintendo Switch, and I have to say, it is a game after my own heart. I love it. It's very stylistic. When I'm done, I'm sure I'll let you borrow it. I think you'll enjoy it, too. I just love when Platinum does games, because they're always, like, weird and quirky with their control and combat systems. And it always looks so nice, like the UI, the interface, and this game looks wonderful for a Switch, despite running at 30 frames per second, which you don't really notice.
Yeah.
And that never really bothered me, but the art style's there, the characters are charming.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, quirky anime, detective, spirit chain, syndicate, whatever the plot is going to be, but it's fun, and it's futuristic sci-fi that I thought you might enjoy.
Of course. I mean, when the time comes and you finish it, I'll trade that with Link's Awakening, with... which has been a very wholesome and pleasant experience with a lot of blur. Again, people have been fooling around with the blur
There's
slider
too,
a little.
Too much blur, but, too much bloom.
But
like
other than that.
Needs more bloom. Just erases it out.
But
my cataracts, Dan, my cataracts.
A milky hue over the...
white glow.
But I'll pass that along.
But we do have some slight Pokemon news that got revealed this week.
Yes.
So should we discuss?
Yeah, we got some Gigantamax fellows unveiled.
And something never before seen, a new Charizard form. Who would have imagined such a thing?
And I like it. I've always liked Charizard.
But he gets everything he wants.
Assuming, and again, like, I'm hesitantly on the Grookey gang. However, this time I am waiting to see if we get the evolution. Because I love all of them.
Yeah,
like,
I like that they haven't revealed them. Because usually we'd, like, have our teams planned out already. So I like how they're, you know, slowly milking out the info.
Yeah,
us.
No. I mean, that is another, like, people this time are upset about that.
Yeah.
But,
well,
like...
They get upset about everything.
But, I like the sense of mystery that that's been building up. But of course, inevitably, when the rollout week happens, someone's going to get some... Walmart's going to ship it to somebody in Europe too early.
The game
and then,
will leak in a matter of seconds.
So we'll know the starters and we'll know our final choices. And when we do, we'll report them immediately to...
for judgment.
For the audience.
To
but,
the ancient would-be step back.
You know, if... But assuming that I do go with Grookey, I do like, you know, when other starters are available. So maybe I'll do a Grookey and a Charizard team, or if the other ones are in there, maybe it would be a
sacrilege.
Maybe a Score Bunny and a Venusaur or something like that. But I'm assuming the other two Kanto boys are in there somewhere.
Not as much as Charizard.
but again, people are upset. Mm-hmm. They've kind of jumped on a I want to say. A bandwagon is the right word, that, you know, Kanto pandering, and I'm like, guys, it's a multimedia franchise, mm-hmm. like, they're just revealing the ones that are the marketable ones, because at the very least, even people who are casual players will see that, and they'll think it's cool, and obviously, as was the case with Mega Evolution...
It will die.
Well, yeah, but also, like, especially with these games, like... These seem like pretty big games, and so far all we've seen are, like, you know, the little early routes with the sheeps rolling about, or the wild area. There's still huge portions of this game that we have not, like, we don't know what's in stock, so I'm very excited for this game, because it's just, I need some Pokemon again.
Yeah, in my life, in our lives. I will say that Gigantamax Eevee does horrify me, because he goes, Eevee.
Yeah. Well, they all, like,
He looks very angry for some reason. He's like, I'm gonna kill you.
Like, I didn't notice that, but they do all have, like, the, the booming, like.
Yeah, like that episode of the anime. But Pikachu.
But
Butterfree, my boy, my Beamish boy, back in all his Mothra glory.
Yeah, even more so now.
I'm very happy.
They are going hard with the Godzilla rev. I mean, we got Mecha Godzilla finally, who I will probably use. So, you know, obviously
and they're playing on memes that are centuries old, like Long Cat.
Which Game Freak just got.
They just got the memo. Long Cat's back.
But no, I'm very excited for that. Like, that's, you know. Mm. Is any one thing that makes me feel like a kid, like, it's just waiting for a new Pokemon game to come out, so.
Yeah.
But
well, with that being said, Dan, shall we, you know, tread the path into Season 3?
I'd say so.
Well, in case you don't know, if we didn't drop enough hints, or you can't read, or, you know, haven't listened further on into the episode, we're watching one of my favorite animated series. Yes, I guess it's loosely considered anime in some respects. Over the Garden Wall. So, before we get in, I have a section entitled The Prelude, where we discuss our initial thoughts on the series, where we watched it, you know, how it lingers with us, and it can be short and sweet to the point. So, since its conception, Over in the Garden Wall has been a seasonal rewatch for me, and it speaks to me on so many levels as a tribute to older animation styles, folk tales, music, and modern interpretation of those said fairy tales. Not only is this season that we're watching this in, being October, November, applicable to what we're watching, but I feel like this series consists of animation and a story that must be witnessed as a fan of cartoons and the like in order to be fully appreciated and loved. It is a love letter to Americana, and there's nothing more we can ask for. It's perfect. It's short, it's sweet, it's to the point, and I think everyone, no matter whose animation they're a fan of, should see this series.
Of course, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, and I think I watched it on its conception, and we'll discuss the dates and, like, when it premiered, but I think in our friend group, I might have been the first to be like, hey, check this out, and then I shared it with someone else, and then I was like, all right, we all gotta watch this. And I think we had a watch of it at one point, did we? I can't remember, but I thought we did. Maybe it was someone else, but
yeah,
I could have swore.
Perhaps. Yeah. Because, yeah, no, my memories watching the show, I was at college, and my roommates brought it up, and we made a little nightly thing out of watching the episodes as they were uploaded. So yeah, no, I mean, that was my, I mean, I maybe we staged a rewatch,
maybe, I don't remember
the memory
annals of
go.
Our history. Yeah. But any thoughts on the show, things that stand out to you, things you appreciate, things you respect or fear?
I agree with you that this is probably one of the most, like, maybe perfect animated series that I have had the pleasure of viewing. And we do have the perfect aesthetic for today. It is cold, rainy, leaves are falling. Yeah,
depressed.
Yeah, seasonal depression's kicking in. Yep. The future is uncertain. We don't know where we're heading, but we're following the trail.
Yeah.
But this is one of the, you know, I mean, I think at this point it has, especially in by 2019, the, you know, cartoons are for kids debate has long since been settled.
Yeah.
But this is, like, this is something that all ages, like, anyone can appreciate. Sit down and enjoy, because it is just that good.
Mm-hmm.
And the phrasing might be weird, but it is just the right amount of itself.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a franchise that has been milked to death. It has not been, like, dragged out. Mm-hmm. It presented itself, and then it was allowed to tell that story. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. And I very much appreciate that. Like, yeah. I, you know, that is a rare thing these days.
And that's not to say, like, we wouldn't want more, but it was done so perfectly the first time. It's, like, hard to go back and, like, get a 10-year later Over the Garden Wall reboot.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, the actual anime adaptation of the series, which, you know, may be a thing someday. But I know outside of this series, they continue some storylines in the comic books, but mm-hmm. it's the same respect. It's, like, very short, it's very sweet, simple plot lines, and then a little bit of expanding the universe, but not revealing the whole hand.
And as opposed to the things that we have, you know, we jokingly sometimes discuss the future, this series is very Ghibli-esque.
Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
It very much leans on its environment.
Yes.
And, you know, the plot of each episode is simple, but mm-hmm. there are layers and layers of depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the antagonists might not necessarily be complete antagonists, except for obvious...
Yeah, someone
whom
we meet.
But...
or we may discuss.
But they... but, you know, even then, there's just an air of mystery kept about it. And, you know, it's not too simple, and it's not too complex. It's mm-hmm. just... It's just a perfectly crafted tale, I would say.
And so. I also respect the genres, how it's a kid's show, but... like, and we'll see in the notes how it could have been a little bit darker, but it's still very dark mm-hmm. in some regards, too. So I like whenever, like, children are exposed, because they can handle things.
Yeah.
If they're serious enough and mature enough, and I'm pretty sure as a child, this is the stuff that drew us to it.
Yeah.
Like, we wanted to see it a little bit darker things, and how they use comedy as well. So it blends, like, comedic, like, we'll get to a certain schoolhouse in an episode or two, and I think it's the pinnacle of comedy in television, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just straight out, you know, that part of your heart that loves cartoons
mm-hmm.
and storytelling in general. So I'm excited to enjoy this rewatch with you.
Of course.
I just have a small drawing board to get out of this Edelwood tree just sitting here, covered in leaves and branches and brambles and such. This drawing board is entitled The Conception of Over the Garden Wall. So before we head over the garden wall, we should understand the who, what, where, when, and why of the series. Most of my information is from the Art of Over the Garden Wall book. It's also an excellent read if you want to enjoy that as well. I've taken a lot from fan videos online and straight from the horse's mouth with Patrick McHale and Nick Cross's commentary on the Blu-ray mm-hmm. that we are watching, because only the best for this series. But I watched every episode about 5 times and took these notes during those watches,
of course,
each with a different lens. So I hope that it's enough. And like I said, if you want to learn more, there's a thing called the internet, children. I don't know if you're aware, but perhaps a brief Google browse...
don't go too deep.
...will light your candle and set your lantern alit. All right, so Over the Garden Wall is a 10-episode miniseries. Technically 11. We're going to start with a little special thing that was invented for this. So Over the Garden Wall is a 10-episode miniseries created by New Jersey native Patrick McHale.
Yeah, I did not know he was New Jersey native. Okay.
Yeah, another good person. We got Patrick McHale, we got Whitney, and...
Danny DeVito?
Italians in there. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I don't know about their political views or, you know, their views on humanity, but...
of course.
It is New Jersey and it is home. The series premiered over 5 nights, November 3rd to November 7th, on Cartoon Network in 2014, making this the 19, right?
We're 19.
I can't do math. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19.
Like 4 years?
Yeah, five. We can't add.
Yeah, okay. Because it was when I was in college. So, yeah, it would, in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Mikkel graduated from the California Institute of the Arts in 2006 with a BFA in character animation. He began his professional career at Cartoon Network Studios in 2007, just a year after, as writer and storyboard artist on The Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack. Yeah, so, another me, Dan, and our friend groups, shout out to Grant, love The Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack.
Yeah, it's always, you know, yeah, when, because people are starting to pull from that for gifts and stuff, and I love that some surprise Flapjack content.
Yeah, so Pat McHale was responsible for some of these characters, even though he only helped create about 10 episodes in total. They were the initial episodes, so mm-hmm. His comedy was seen throughout the whole series, and it's another underappreciated gem that perhaps we may dive into. I think they have DVDs released, but always be waiting for the Blu-ray for that series.
Yeah.
After leaving Flapjack, he joined fellow Cal Arts alum and Flapjack storyboard artist Pendleton Ward to help develop Ward's Adventure Time short into an animated series, so a prestigious career already. He's responsible for such characters of Adventure Time as BMO and the Lich. Mm-hmm. So these two different characters, BMO is way more of the comedy aspect with technology, and the Lich is probably, like, you know, one of our favorite villains because it's so serious and creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the animation is just, like, skin peeling off his face.
Well, good body horror, yes. And that definitely comes into play here.
In a children's show, yeah. So, you know, that's part of the things we loved. Once the show got picked up, Mikhail stayed on board as the show's creative director through the show's second season. He then moved to New York City with his wife and fellow filmmaker, Ji-Wook Kim. He continued to freelance for the show in the capacity of writing some songs and providing input on story outlines. This lasted until the middle of season 5, so Adventure Time didn't drag. I finished it all. I think it picks up a lot near the end,
mm-hmm.
but I would say that that's, like, the pinnacle of Adventure Time. Because remember, we used to watch that show religiously, too.
Yeah.
Like, did you see the new Adventure Time? We'd put it on. We'd discuss it.
Yeah.
But I remember early Adventure Time being chef's kiss, mm-hmm. beautiful, right? So while this was going on, Mikhail was busy at work pitching two shows to Cartoon Network in 2006. Pace Planet was a philosophical space opera, and Tome of the Unknown, which proved to be Over the Garden Wall's precursor. The show's premise involved two boys making a deal with the devil, forcing them to read and experience a collection of forgotten stories. Almost like Cuphead, but also, like, you know, that's also like a 1930s, 20s stereotype. It's like, don't cheat the devil, children. You're gonna get a hot foot in hell. Forgotten stories. The two brothers, Gregory and Walter, inspired our heroes Greg and Wurtz, and other such characters and plot lines involved into the current show that we're going to discuss. Cartoon Network took interest in the project and originally wanted Tome of the Unknown to be in a movie format. But Mikhail eventually suggested that a miniseries format would be more conducive to the story being told. But mm-hmm. I could see this as a movie too. Even if, like, the pilot was a movie, because there's some ideas that got cut from the entire series in general. Not a mm-hmm. lot, but I would like to see all the ideas that were present in this. So I think a movie could work, but I'm glad they went the miniseries option too, because we got a little bit more out of it.
Of course.
And this was before the onset of Netflix, I feel. Like, if that was a thing...
No, it would have been right before, yeah.
Yeah,
so
I think, like, if that was a thing, then Netflix would have picked it up, because I know Mikhail is currently... I think he's working with Guillermo del Toro on a Pinocchio miniseries, but, like, after, like, the Italian version of it, which gets really dark and scary too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm obsessed with that. I love the little puppet made of pine. I love him so much, so I can't wait to see what
Guillermo?
That...
No.
Yeah, Guillermo. Well, this is a fairy, children. Let it guide your eyes. That's for our Pan's Labyrinth rewatch when we get there. After Pirates, we'll do the Guillermo series. And our fans won't know what to think. They won't know up from down. So Mikhail wanted a series consisting of a darker mix of classic Germanic fairy tales and a world that combined dreams and the yesteryear of American folklore. He was a page turn. Also heavily inspired by, wait for this, Dan, opera, ballet, and musical genres from past decades.
Mm-hmm.
Basically everything vintage. So he's a hipster after mine own heart. Because
of course.
As a youth, I liked these things as well. And no one else around me did. Some of the original episode ideas have things shown in the series, like a village of frogs and a shady woodsman. But others seem even darker, like defeating a skinless witch and dealing with the evil Old Scratch, aka the devil himself.
Mm-hmm.
So these things aren't exactly in the series, but I feel like it evolved in a progressive way, right? ideas. Oh, yeah, they happen. Yeah. So, before the series was greenlit, we get to our first main event of the night. Cartoon Network released Tome of the Unknown, Harvest Melody, which gave, we will give a watch before recording. It was released online in 2013, and it's an 11-minute short that served as the pilot for Over the Garden Wall. Originally, Mikhail pitched Episode 7, which we'll get to a little bit later, one of my favorite episodes, The Ringing of the Bell, to be the pilot. But many felt the episode was scary or hopeless, so they settled on a whimsical story with vegetable people instead. Mm-hmm. So before we get into our first of two episodes, I was thinking the episode format that we'd use for our podcast is not just one episode, because I feel like we'd talk for 30 minutes and then we'd be done. So I think we're going to do two or three episodes per episode, if that makes any sense.
Of course.
So about five episodes in total. So here we go, Dan. Can you hear the music playing? The harvest melody is about to begin. Let's go. Hop into our vegetable car. Beep, beep.
We're going to burgle some turds. Let's go.
Yes, and we can play Find the Sad Cat. Ooh, that too old cat. That cat is too old. Back, and I have one question for you, Dan. Why wasn't that goose the main character in this series?
A scrapped beta element was that goose with the blue ribbons.
It would have been timely with Untitled Goose Game out.
Yeah, yeah.
If only they knew the literal goose egg that they were sitting on. But we watched the original pilot, Harvest Melody, and we watched the first episode of official of the Over the Garden Wall series, The Old Grist Mill.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that grist is a wheat ground into flour.
Okay, that would make
sense.
Thanks,
Google.
Yeah, so it was an abandoned one of those.
It
was
an old potato farm.
Well, there was a potato sack there.
It doesn't figure probably in when we get there. But, you know, initial thoughts with Harvest Melody. I would say, like, before you even go into this, you could see, if you are an experienced fan of the series, just where the subtle differences are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Elijah Wood is reprising, or basically starting out his role as a Wirt. But other than that, the vocal cast is slightly changed and slightly altered. So it's not the exact same voices we see in the main series.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good to know that Elijah Wood, and I have notes on him later on in other episodes, but he was basically all for this series as soon as it was pitched for him. So I love that we have people and producers like him that stick around and, you know, lend their talent.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good thing to know. And that's similar with all the voice cast of this. Basically, when they were reached out for... they responded with a hearty yes. Patrick McHale denotes that this was his dream cast to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he gets celebrities like Tim Curry and John Cleese later on, and basically they're like, yeah, we'll do it. It sounds dope.
Yeah.
So that's things like that.
That's cool. Good.
Yeah. So we're going to begin with light pilot notes on Harvest Melody. The openings of all these episodes of Over the Garden Wall are inspired by paper lanterns and wood cutting. So with every opening, we'll get like this wood etching of certain events to happen in the series, or certain objects that are precursors for events to happen in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that Harvest Melody's tone is a lot lighter than a lot of the series, but it does have like elements that get a touch of dark. But I feel like this is a more positive opening. And I would have liked to see what they did if they did. The pilot was going to be something along the lines of The Ringing of the Bell when we get to episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
But a much darker episode in the series. So
yeah.
I think it makes sense, though, being that it was aimed primarily at children. You know,
well, yeah, yeah.
Children do have nightmares. So the narration begins. We get a cold open. It tells us that we are in a place called the Unknown, somewhere lost in history. We meet brothers Wirt and Gregory, and they're with Beatrice, a talking bluebird, and Greg's pet frog, who remains nameless / goes between many names throughout the series. They are looking for a book containing all that has been forgotten. I said Elijah Wood has worked, and the others that I'll specify, but basically he's stayed on for the series. And Greg is looking for a goose, and we think, oh, this naive little boy. I don't have a brother myself, and I think they're half-brothers. I don't think they're related directly by blood, which we get to way later on in the series, but... it's always interesting to know, being a fellow sibling at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe the relationship between these two brothers?
Yeah, I would say so. Mm. As well as the you know, the character development that, you know, within the main series where it has to go through, where he, you know, he yeah. is the older sibling, he mm-hmm. is responsible for what the younger sibling does, so, you know, mm-hmm. he has to, you know, develop into that role and accept that responsibility. So
yeah, and yeah. I mean, if I had to place who I am, obviously as I mature, I'm more of a Wirt, but I would like to think at this table I'm probably the Greg of the group, because he has quirky witticisms about him that he just pulls out of the air, and he goes about his life very naive and carefree.
Well, I note it for episode one, but Wirt with his little soliloquies that he gives off that don't make any sense all the time, but
I mean, he's way more somber and, like, you know, more introverted than his brother.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna constantly say this, but we do get to that later on. Like, everything is slightly explained a bit more episode to episode, and I like how these characters build. So Greg wanders into a garden in search of goose and screams when Wirt is talking, Wirt is talking to Beatrice over just, like, you know, what are we doing here? It's another cold open. We're just thrown in, and it makes sense in the long run, but I like how they do that. So Greg is screaming, and Wirt's like, my God, what happened? And it's like, nothing. I found a vegetable car, and he's just screaming, eating an apple with his frog. And if you like the vegetable car, you should check out the Vegetable Man. And pan to, like, a misty gazebo opening, and we meet John Cropp, who is singing bluegrass about being lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Just out of nowhere, this man made of vegetables is coming to sing us our first song in the series. And while he's singing, we get this really detailedly animated sad cat that's just weeping its little heart out, and you feel so bad for it. But it's another weird, quirky thing to add to this series. It just...
Yeah.
It knows how to get you.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, like, John Cropp's, like, I think embodies a lot of, like, the nicer characters that they meet in the series proper. Like, John Cropp's is kind of like a good little microcosm. Mm-hmm. So, again, this makes sense why this would be the pilot or the proof of concept, so.
And I think the dude singing John Cropp voiced a lot of voices. I forget his name. I think it comes up later when it's more specific. But he voiced a lot of voices, and I do like how they cast singers, like quirky, you know, bluegrass or vintage singers in the roles and the songs that we're going to come across and the styles that present themselves. I also noticed in this rewatch there's a very detailed rose that John Cropp holds and caresses, and petal by petal it falls off, and I was like, oh, this is cute. So John Cropp wants to leave the country and find a gal, but he ain't never been to the big city before. Wirt is far more nervous and awkward than Greg, who is carefree and naive, as we, you know, they get their banter between them. And they basically say, let's ride into town, so we get more narration, like, and the pair, and Beatrice and John Cropp hopped into the vegetable car and drove off to the big city.
Yeah, with Wirt establishing that if they can get him to the city and help him meet a gal, they'll get his car.
Yeah, so, you know, rite of passage, or is that how we barter in this universe, I guess?
Yeah.
A car for a favor, but I can believe it. And, obviously, I don't think he says he's in high school in this episode or the next episode. He might have mentioned it, but it might have been something that I recently watched. But Wirt is around high school age, so he doesn't have his driving permit yet. But you could tell by the way he's animated. He's constantly, like, checking over his shoulder and looking around anxiously. And Beatrice, they do get some cute... I mean, she doesn't get a lot of lines in this, but she's like, don't crash it. Don't crash it. Quiet you, right? So it's a cute relationship between them. So on their way to the big city, they're attacked by these demonic crows and they're giant crows. So it's another sense of scale. Like, is everything scaled up, like these vegetable people and the crows, or is, our heroes scaled down, you know, in miniature? So we don't really know, but it does happen a lot throughout the series. And, these demon crows were kind of the first scary instance that we've got in Over the Garden Wall. And I think they're done well, because crows can be scary. But I like them. I don't understand how crows, or is it ravens, that are intelligent? They're both smart birds, right?
There's a word for a what that like Corviknight, who I'm very excited for.
As we all are.
But you know, they are. I think it's crows, because crows are the ones that, like, they'll, you know, you can barter, like, train them
because, for shiny things.
Yeah, like they'll like understand patterns and who to go to get food and like. They're surprisingly...
Then how do they not know what a scarecrow is?
It might just... Well, we all have blind spots, but
we all have our flaws.
I think that's just like they assume it's a person, but
yeah, an unmoving person.
But even then, there's like a classic like trope image of like a bunch of crows hanging out on a scarecrow. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know.
It's deep in the annals of Americana somewhere.
What did the crows, why do they fear?
Why did Americans erect these effigies to scare the crows? But the crows attack and they crash into a scarecrow. And then they're like, well, now we'll never make it to the big city. And John Crops is like, well, look no further. The big city is right here. And it turns out to be these Victorian-style vegetable people are having like an outdoor jazz fest. And I put that all the vegetable people are individually and nuanced in their design.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. Like, we got some cabbage leaves. We got a tomato. We got a potato sneaking.
A watering can.
A watering can and pretending it's alcohol. We got corn cob people. So I love this design.
The onion or turnip mayor. I'm not sure. Yeah.
And Pat McHale and the artistic team basically took this inspiration from old like Victorian greeting cards where, you know, frogs would dance and vegetable people would say things like how do or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. This seems like it would be like the illustration and like a
highbrow
like fanciful.
Magazine.
Yeah.
Something I would read that'd be like a page-long pamphlet and then turn over. So the entertainment unfortunately has to end. But before that, Beatrice and Wirt go off to fix the car. And basically how they fix it is like a cucumber tire. Taste it, and then it's like a pan to Wirt about to lick it. And then a pan back to Greg and John Crops exploring the big city. This isn't really a big city, but by old folks' standards, I guess, you know, a gazebo means outdoor entertainment.
And they're vegetables, so they live in a field, so
true.
It would be that is the population center. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the entertainment has to end due to the corn man popping.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's got the vapors or he's.
I assume that's what he's got, like a fever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Unless someone in the audience can croon a tune under the moon while watching cartoons with a baboon or
eating prunes. Yeah.
Yes, and so they realize like. John Crops, or at least Greg, is like, you could sing, you should join. And then this one cabbage lady is like, ho, 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 you can sing, can you? A musician, eh? So, you know, that was one of those positions you could have back in the day that would get you all the love, Dan. But John Crops eventually goes up, and he's killing it. But while he's doing this, I think they realize, like, they fixed the car, or...
They just had to, like, wind it
to get
it going
again. Yeah, they just
had to
wind the engine. Wirt and Beatrice are doing that, and on their way back, we get the narrator like, but they didn't know the damage that would ensue, because by knocking over the scarecrow, the crows and demonic turkeys and an alligator for some reason start popping out and eating it. Well, not even eating, like, the people, just, like, attacking the car.
Yeah.
And, like, we don't see any vegetable people, die, but we see them being plagued by the crows, and they're like, we gotta get out of here, John Crops, where you at? And John Crops is singing... like old Harvest Moon with his cabbage lady.
Yeah.
And they're in love, and he's like, all right, we're gonna steal this car. Oh, heck no. We're getting out of here. it's Harvest Moon is the name of the song. As animals descend and eat the car. I just love the random alligator, too, that's animated in the unconventional, like, 1910s style. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not really sure what an alligator looks like.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Here's a fanciful picture of it.
An etching.
An etching of it. So Greg, yet again, he bails as this crop car is getting attacked. And then he screams once more. And Wirt and Beatrice run off to see what he's screaming over. And he goes, a goose! Then that's it. And the narration is basically like, well, that scream scared them all away. And they never were to return again. And John Crop settled down with his missus in the country. And the adventure continued on. And all travel into the unknown. They go, Wirt, Gregory, Beatrice, and a goose.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to that and the goose, Dan?
I don't know. But
did the goose not read well during the screening?
Yeah, with the test audiences. Yeah. the focus groups didn't like the goose. But the goose is dressed in, like, a blue ribbon.
It's supposed to be a mother goose parallel,
yeah.
I think. Yeah,
yeah. So, like, because I feel like that's the quintessential illustration for, like, mother goose or whatever. So, you know, I'm curious as to... Again, it might have just not, because we do get other quirky animal sidekicks eventually, but I am curious why the goose was, the goose mount was done away with, but
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. I mean, we could rate these at the end when we watch our batch of episodes and just see, like, where they fall in the timeline. But I think every episode holds up in some way. I don't think one is better than the other. So this one also didn't have a lot of trivia because there was no director's commentary on this.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I got was, and I wanted to run by you, was Mikhail wanted to make an 18-episode series at first, but then he settled on 10. Or this tentative 11 with the pilot due to budget. So would you want another 7 episodes of this? I mean, it doesn't seem that long, but there are 10 episodes in the main series proper. So it's about twice as long then it would be.
Well, in, you know, I mean, because I took a little, like a few notes just about how this, you know, what the original plan or idea would have been.
Yes, and we get into more details of that throughout the series, but bring it up. I can bring it up.
But, yeah, I mean, if this was supposed to be, like, 18, you said?
Hmm?
17 or 18?
18.
18, like, because unlike the final series, and you can correct me at any, because you definitely know more, we have, like, a MacGuffin here. We have the Tome of the Unknown.
Yes.
So we have a goal. Mm-hmm. We have the One Piece that they could be searching for. So maybe... You know, whereas where we, you know, we come into the actual series, we're kind of just with the characters, we're put down into it, and the loose goal is to, like, maybe get out of here and get home, which is a very, you know, it's a very broad goal.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe under the original plan, if there was this, you know, the Tome of the Unknown that they were searching for, and then you said that the thing about making a deal with the devil to find... you know, or Old Scratch or whatever, to find the Tome of the Unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that in itself would have warranted a few extra episodes to build in how they got to that point, and then the tome itself and what that would, you know, how that would take shape. So maybe under this original plan, but I think in the, you know, in the final version we got, the length makes sense for what they're, because it's, it comes down to just getting home, so.
Mm-hmm. I agree too. The original series premise was basically these two brothers, I don't know if they keep, and I don't want to reveal, you know, exactly how the series ends just yet, but I don't know if they keep that original ending. But these two brothers wander into the unknown. They meet a devil, or the devil, who's basically a man, kind of Woodsman-esque. I think the Woodsman stepped in for this character in the new premise of the series. But his name is Old Scratch, and he's essentially the devil. And he makes a bargain with them, like, hunt down my pages to the book and get the rest of these stories complete and write them down for me, and I'll send you back home. So essentially, it's like every episode's a bottle episode. Like, they jump into a new Mario World painting or a page from the book, and they deal with old folklore, which is essentially what happens, but in a looser sense. So, I mean, I think it's very Cuphead. So I think Cuphead, like, that sounds exactly like Cuphead to me, almost. Except, you know, these characters aren't as evil. They're just... mischievous children.
You're not bounty hunting.
Yeah. But that's originally the premise that was going to be done in about 18 episodes. So, budget also, and you could see slightly how the budget definitely improved from, like, the first episode.
Definitely.
The pilot to the first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, certain characters, they're off model in a lot of scenes. We see, like, Greg. He's a chubby little boy, but he's off model, and, you know, his facial expressions and word as well.
In the woods they open on too. I think in the final series version, we, you know, they're kind of dwarfed by these woods, like, they're, you know, rightfully so, they're just gigantic.
Yeah.
Whereas in this pilot, it's just a very small little wooded path as opposed to an overwhelming forest.
So it's interesting to see what they did with the money, and they used it well. So if that made sense to me, I think I can hold up with the 11 or the 10 episode series that we got. All right, well, pilot's over. Shall we proceed into our first episode?
Of course.
The Old Grist Mill. So as I said, grist was something that was ground into flour, a wheat that was ground into flour. So it gives notes or connotation to the setting that we're in. So as I said with these episodes, I try to watch once with commentary, once without, and take notes from the book and online also. So I hope to give you a little more information. And like I said, interrupt me anytime, because I tend to ramble. So the opening we have to discuss for a long while, because this opening is brilliant. I kind of want to watch the series and then return to this opening, because there's a lot of things that we see in this opening that pop up in different episodes.
I'm not going to interrupt anymore, but I noticed something that I wouldn't have, like, that only makes sense when you've, like, and I, again, without this rewatch, I wouldn't have probably been paying attention to that, but yeah.
Yeah, so, of course we get... I think he's called BP Frog is his official name, but I refer to him as Benjamin Franklin a lot in my notes because that's the most popular Greg name, or that's the one that sticks with me the most. But we get this frog on the piano singing, showing vignettes, including a girl and her dog throwing a mysterious rock at a bluebird. We get a cat's driving a carriage of turkeys. We get a gorilla in a circus. We get toys of different tavern patrons set up in a mysterious way. We see a man looking in his mansion at a painting. We also get a woman snipping some yarn in her living abode or whatever. Two boys in a boat. A girl in like this French-style bones underground situation.
Catacomb.
And the woodsman... who we meet a little bit later, and a girl looking off into the distance before finally a hand picking up a rock with a silly face on it. So all things that we'll touch upon a bit later, but Pat McHale says this opening was inspired by the opening of Rocky Horror Picture Show. So it basically gives you little clues what's happening throughout the show or what's going to happen before, you know, cementing together the story that we have.
Yeah.
And while this is going, there's narration, like, you know, there's something going on. The intro shows us what's to come in the series as the theme plays. Pat McHale and his workers didn't know how the series would end, so this opening was made halfway through the production. So they basically said, we need to find a way to connect all the loose threads, and we're going to make this opening and put it at the beginning of the series. So I thought that was a very interesting choice, and I think it does work very well, because it lends to another rewatch, and it just drops little clues that you have to pay attention to, even little things in this episode. This episode was difficult due to setting up Wirt and Greg just out of the blue. We get no backstory to them, and it almost feels like there's an episode before this. And technically there are, but this is what they decided to start with. They didn't want to make the pair seem too annoying from the jump. They replaced the lost book with a simpler journey from place to place, almost like a hero's journey instead of a mission or a quest where they had to find all these different items. Each episode was meant to seem like a square on a quilt, when patched together, forms a whole picture. A decision was made to start the story right in the midst of Wirt and Greg's journey and not reveal too much until the end of the series, which is always good. You know, leave it open-ended, have the audience make their own conclusions, but I do enjoy what they did with this opening, and I really respect it. So, to get into the plot, Greg is making a name for his frog, and that's the first thing we come upon. Like, and I think the absolute worst name for this frog is, hey, Greg, where are we? It's like, oh, I was just following you.
No, that's one of those things that instantly it endeared me to Greg. Was then those are the worst possible names of this.
He's very cute. I love him. He's very optimistic, and it just goes over his head. And I teach a lot of kids like Greg, so I guess that's why I'm still in the business.
Yeah,
even though I'm more of a Wirt type, but. we meet older brother Wirt, or the elder child Wirt, who's an overdramatic poet / worry wart, and Greg, who is younger and more naive. We don't know why, but they're dressed... I don't think... This isn't period wear, because Wirt looks kind of like a gnome in a Civil War era nurse's cape, and we get a Greg, who is essentially just wearing
a pot.
Well, it's not... It's a teapot because... Originally, they were going to use the pot, but it said it was too much, it reminded them too much of Johnny Appleseed, so they didn't want to, make that parallel. So they chose a teapot instead to make him a quirky, and we can't understand why Greg would wear a teapot on his head, but he does anyway, and little overalls and shoes, so it's not period-appropriate wear, it's very mismatched, but it also doesn't belong in the modern era, but these two characters talk in a very modern way.
Yeah.
So it gives you some more clues. We then, you know, they're walking along, and we also see a bluebird just sitting there in the darkness watching at first, and we're not introduced to her yet, but we hear someone singing or muttering chop down the Edelwood cheese, and it's the woodsman voiced by Christopher Lloyd, who does a great job.
One of my comments was just perfection from Christopher Lloyd as he does in everything, but his voice was just this character. For him, you know, every element just works perfectly, so I always want to emphasize that, so.
And the bluebird eventually talks, hey, are you lost? I can kind of help you out. And they're like, oh, You're a bluebird who could talk. And she's like, yeah, I can kind of do that. Also talking a little bit more modern, which, I mean, I think we can theorize why it happens a little bit later when we get a little more clues into this series.
Yeah.
But it's interesting nonetheless. And then the woodsman shows up and is like, children, you shouldn't be in these woods. Ah! And my favorite word line from this episode is, you could do whatever you want in these woods and we wouldn't care. That's your business. But just leave us be. We want to keep all our limbs intact. And, you know, Wirt is the constant talker and Greg's just like, well, I'm happy to be here. So yeah. I don't really know what to do. But he's like, children, come with me. This isn't a place for the woods. And Beatrice is also like, oh, all right, bye. I'm going to go now. I'll see you later. So the woodsman warns the children that the beast of the unknown is on the prowl, so we need to be safe because he claims the souls of those who, you know, fall into his trap.
Yes.
So a very vague description, like, is this man mad? We don't really know because we just met him. But the woodsman leads them to an abandoned mill, and his job is essentially to grind the Edelwood to keep oil in his lantern, to keep the lantern lit. Some things that I noticed in this rewatch is he does reveal to the children that this is my father's homestead abandoned, but judging by all the clues, and there's subtle ones in this episode, we see like a bluebird statue, we see bluebird potatoes, and there are clues that denote later on in the series that this could be Beatrice's original mill house.
Okay.
Where her family and friends live. And I mean, we'll reveal a bit more about her when we get there, but it's suggested that that's where she's from and that's why she's hanging out around there.
Yeah.
To be a little bit more wistful. And there's very little clues. Like, you have to look and notice it. But while he's doing that and explaining that, another small detail is he throws a stick that's abandoned underneath the couch and we get a close-up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, I wouldn't mention it, but it is important and it shows up like at the very end of the series. The same stick is sitting there under this same couch. And it's just like little details like that. Like, they knew where they were going with this.
Right.
And they expect you to remember, but I just think that's interesting. So while they're talking, the woodsman reveals, like, I'm going to go do my work, but then when I'm done, hopefully I can do my best to guide you to a safer place.
Yeah.
And Wirt and Greg are essentially discussing, like, is this man crazy? Like, I don't know. And I do love Greg in this scene because he's like, well, before he goes, he's like, what's your plan? Well, maybe we should knock him out or something. Well, that was your plan. We're going to knock you out and then run away.
Yeah.
It's like, child, I need to get to work. And during this scene when Wirt is waxing poetically on the couch, Greg is picking up different objects and just practicing swinging them.
Yeah.
And it's just hilarious. Like, they give him so much background work to do to create his character. And I love him so much for it.
Yeah.
I do. So, and we get our first, rock facts. So, you know, while Wirt is going, I feel like a ship lost at sea in the eternal darkness of my mind, never with a right direction in my life. And Greg's like, if you soak a raisin in grape juice, it turns into a grape. That's a rock fact. He goes like, Greg, why don't you go play with your frog or something? Where is that frog of mine? Don't worry, second brother of mine. Yeah. I'll be right back.
He's giving him the runaround.
giving me the runaround. And we forgot to mention that Greg is also spewing candy throughout this whole episode. And a piece of candy gets stuck to Wirt's cloak that he doesn't notice, but we see animation-wise. And I just love how he has all this candy.
Yeah.
And it also makes sense in the context of the series later on. So, you know. It does. So Greg has a constant candy trail about him. The frog's giving me the runaround. And he runs outside looking for the frog and trips on his own candy. And he's calling the frog, kitty, kitty, where you at? it turns out that there's like a growling in the distance. And he spies the woodsman maniacally, almost like madly, grinding up the Edelwood and making this black oil for the lantern. Just like panicked, have to keep the lantern lit. He hears the growling and falls into a barrel and it's like, oh, there you are, frog. There you are, kitty. And we get this horrific demonic dog that just comes into frame and it's very spooky. And what Greg has to say is, you have beautiful eyes.
And I know that like the basis for these things was like Germanic folktales and everything, but in Britain's folklore, they have and maybe we'll see a Pokemon.
The Grim?
They have Black Shuck.
The darkest omen in our world.
And I mean, because Grim is like a reference to it, but Black Shuck is.
Look into the cup. Bring it here. Bring it. I see beyond.
Where was I?
So in Britain, they have this folklore. Yeah, about the dog,
the Black Shuck. Who, if you were to draw it, like when people draw him, it's a jet black dog with bright glowing eyes, yeah. Like gigantic glowing eyes. So maybe there was like a little bit of influence into, you know, yeah. this puppy here. Mm-hmm. But
and originally they do think this is the beast because that's what the woodsman warned them about. Like, yeah. There's a beast out there. So the beast, whenever talked about, there's always shadows predicted on the wall because Pat McHale had a thing for like shadow play and the over-dramatization of this. I get a lot of like Ichabod and Mr. Toad from this when they explain like the legend of Sleepy Hollow,
yeah.
Which is another thing. And, you know, just shadows on the wall. The kitty is a horror movie trope that he wanted to include where people go off and look for a kitty and it turns out to just be a cat. And then it's like, oh, horsey, I didn't see you there. We'll quote Scary Movie 1. Like, kitty? Yeah. Oh, horse, how did you get in the garage? And then the killer pops up around the corner. So, and there's some monster cuts here. All of this dialogue throughout the series was recorded at different times. Like, the actors were almost never in a room together.
Mm-hmm.
But it does flow together very well, almost as if they were. Because everyone knew they were working on something special. So Pat McHale theorized that they stepped it all up. And they wanted to show their best for the quality product. And then, you know, Wirt is inside playing, not with a ball and a cup, it's like a ball and a stick, and he's just looking at it like, oh, I'll never get this right. And then the woodsman goes, where's your brother? And then, oh golly, hot dog! Greg comes in, and the beast just rockets through the wood, and as the woodsman is about to land the killing bowl, he's like, this thing is not the beast, children. Wirt comes and knocks him out with a piece of wood.
Well, he knocks his hat off, yeah, and then he trips the over the other log.
The bluebird statue and hits his head on the log.
Yeah.
Conks him out.
Why
did you do that? Yeah. No, new plan. Gotta get away. And then instead of chopping the beast up, Greg hits him with the blunt end of the axe and is like, spank, spank, spank. And this giant dog is just pissed off. So they run. Candy smokescreen or candy camouflage. Throws his candy into the air. Wirt is obviously a chicken, more cowardly, but he does try to protect Greg. Like, he cares, but, you know, he's way more like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
And Greg should follow. And it's realized when they go into the mill portion of this mill that the candy has led the beast straight to them. And they're like, how are we gonna get out of here? And this beast is just destroying this property. So, you know, it's a threat.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what for, or if it's gonna kill these children in front of us, but it's a horrific threat. But they realize, like, there's one piece of candy left stuck to Wirt's jacket, and they eventually go up to the top of the mill.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg throws it off, and the beast, like, jumps into the water wheel, and it's like, oh, is this thing just gonna die? But no, it gets smushed by the wheel and coughs up a black turtle, man. Yeah.
Which I think is one of the most, like, Ghibli moments that we're treated to.
Oh,
in
it,
because, like, it's, you know, like, in Spirited Away.
It's Mononoke, you know, the evil corrupting you inside you. And with these black turtles, I can only offer you that there's no explanation for them. no matter what, because Pat McHale has an explanation for it, but wants to keep it secret and vague. So you can come up with your own conclusions, because he likes a good fanfic. But it coughs up a black turtle, and it turns into this dog from the intro. The same dog we saw with a certain girl throwing a rock at a bluebird, which would make sense why it's hanging around this homestead.
Yeah.
If it's used to that. But it's eaten this black turtle, and that apparently corrupted it. And the woodsman comes out. They're like, we killed the beast! See? I got a new friend out of it.
Yeah, no, and, like, the little turtle also has a piece of candy stuck to it, so it might have been the turtle that
he ate, yeah.
Yeah, like, it, like, just might have happened, so... It was,
you never know.
Yeah. But sorry.
But the woodsman is devastated that the mill is gone because he can't grind any oil anymore, and he needs to keep this lantern lit for reasons yet unrevealed. And he goes, "The dog! That's not the beast, children! The beast is the death of hope! He lingers out there, feasting on the souls of the innocent."
Howling with the wind, yeah.
It's just like, oh, this is a scary figure that we didn't even see. And then Word is basically like, "Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm gonna go." And he's like, "No, boy, you as the elder child must take the responsibility of the youth. Keep your brother safe and head north to a town."
Yeah.
And Greg is essentially like, "Yeah, I'm okay with this, but and keep that frog of yours safe. Give him a proper name." It's just funny to me that they have to mention that. And, you know, they're basically discussing what happens offhanded as it fades to black and Beatrice is yet again watching.
Mm-hmm.
The moon in the background of the series is essentially the moon that would have been taking place when the series premiered. So yeah, they planned that far in advance and sketched out the moon as it would be during the premiere during those November days in 2006. Just to keep you interested. Yeah. Except cool. It's like reverse. Mm-hmm. It's like upside down almost. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing.
Hmm.
Mm. And with that, you know, my notes end for episode one. So do we have any final thoughts before we conclude, Daniel?
I mean, it goes without saying, but just a very good intro for the show. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, you know, I think this sets us on the path that we, you know, we're going to be on. And it does a very effective job of, you know, getting us to like these characters already, but not giving away too much of its mystery. Like creating a lot of mysteries, but not, you know,
giving us too much.
We want to keep watching. Yeah. So.
And I do like that this episode was a lot darker. Mm-hmm. So technically the series did start on a darker tone, mm-hmm, with elements of comedy, but this dog is horrific. And I think it gets darker, but then there's a few more lighter episodes to break this up. So it's interesting in looking at the tone of this tome of the unknown. But I do like when it... I like the darker episodes a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think they stick with me a bit more. But I'm glad you were here for our first episode.
Of course.
And, you know, a happy merry toast for the ones that will come after. So hopefully you watch along with us in this series. I think you can find this online, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to find. It's been out for a few years if you haven't seen it already. But give us a rewatch whenever you feel comfortable with that. And before we go, is there anywhere that our audience can find us on social media, Dan?
You can follow me on Instagram at king_Danis. And of course, a few of the images or pictures the art I've posted has the link also to our Instagram page, which needs some love. I would love more followers for that page too, because we're gonna revamp that as time goes on. So,
mm-hmm. And you can follow me, Jonathan Kalkowski, on Twitter at drinkandreadjk, Instagram at losingmymindjk, or my other film/drinking podcast, Nightcaps at the Theater. Our newest episode isn't up. It's a little late. We had a wedding in the family, so we had to go take care of that. But the newest episode, and I'll give you a hint now, it's a certain classic horror movie that might have been directed by Steven Spielberg. It's got a Zelda Rubinstein going, "Go into the line!" So what could it be? I don't know. I won't give away everything, but it's a classic horror film that we had a lot of fun watching, and it's coming at you real soon. And you can please follow us, as we said, at Instagram, at Anime Was Not a Mistake Podcast, or on Facebook at Anime Was Not a Mistake. Please rate, review, and subscribe and listen. And we know that we're changing things up a little bit. Some of you might not technically consider this anime, but bear with us. Mm-hmm. Our intentions are in the best place. And we'll get back to anime. Yeah. That's not, like, off the table.
And, you know, of course, we are going to get back to anime, but, you know, again, we, as we said last week, we hope that you're here for us. But the things that, you know...
Who could ever love a beast, Dan?
I mean, aside from this just being a fantastic series, I can just visually tell here in the that this is something that's very close to Jonathan's heart.
Uh-huh.
This project, this undertaking, and what he's also given me the green light to do for our next batch of episodes is something very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, none of this would be possible without...
viewers like
Jonathan.
You.
Well,
thank you.
but either way, as we move forward with these things, I want to say it'll fill in like why we enjoyed the things we did, even about the Ghibli movies and the anime movie and everything else. Like, you're going to see more of the tropes that we love, more of the you know, the films and the media experiences that made us want to do something like this in the first place. So yeah. I think it all will come together like mm-hmm. like a quilt.
So. Yeah, and I think the episode's shorter format, like I think some of the episodes we'll do later on will be a bit shorter, mm-hmm. but we'll try to keep it around the hour mark, just so you know, that's the podcast length that I like the most. Mm-hmm. I like a nice talk amongst people about things that I love, so well, they might be a little bit shorter, but we'll mm-hmm. return to our feature length, if that makes any sense, like of the episode, feature yes, length, yes. length, eventually, mm-hmm. After this season, if we get renewed, who knows, you know, will PBS's funding cut out on us, I don't know.
Gotta buy those tote bags.
Yeah, we gotta think of an anagram for PBS next episode, because I didn't have that prepared, and some nasty things came to mind that I didn't want to share aloud. But with that, Dan, we've gotta keep going along this path in search for a town, and oh, Pottsfield. I've never been there before. Wow, the air smells of pumpkin and turkeys, and oh, is that cultish chanting I hear in the distance? Let's go further into the unknown. Thank you, guys.
Have a good week.
As we trek once again into the unknown in Season 3, we want to thank you stalwart listeners for your support. Searching for Adelwood to keep our lanterns lit is no easy task, but with you bluebirds tagging along, these chores feel like follies. If you wish to continue down the mysterious path set by Over the Garden Wall, then please rate, review, subscribe, and listen to us on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and more, or sweet Jimmy will never come home. You can also feel free to follow us on Instagram at Anime Was Not a Mistake Podcast, or on Facebook at Anime Was Not a Mistake Pod. What strange wonders this modern world holds. Wait, where is Jason Funderburker? We will never get to Adelaide at this rate. Well, at least we can have some tea and potatoes and molasses while we wait.